The Roger the Wild Child Show is brought to you by our friends at Prism Design Company. Are you looking for a cool new logo for your business? Do you need some graphics for your new website or blog? Our friends at Prism Design are a premier graphics design company that can handle all your needs. You can find Prism Design Company on Facebook or contact them directly at 618-534-4291. All the great graphics on the Roger the Wild Child Show are brought to you by our friends at Prism Design Company. And now, the hottest new celebrity interview show in the universe. It's the Roger the Wild Child Show.
Let's get this party started! Ready, set, go!
On the air everywhere.
It's the Roger the Wild Child Show!
It's time for another exciting edition of the Roger the Wild Child Show with your host, Roger the Wild Child, along with musician, producer, and real estate investor Darren Sheff and former Playboy Playmate cover girl and centerfold Deborah Driggs.
Are you ready?
Let's do this.
Starts right now.
It's the Roger the Wild Child Show!
Hey, what's up, everybody? It is take two. Oh my gosh, I cannot believe. I don't know what happened. You know, sometimes technical issues do come into play. And Darren, what do you got going? You got some growth coming out of your mouth here. What's going on?
I know. I mean, look at Imogen. She's got something. I'm like, well, that's kind of cool. All right, there.
There you go. I'll put some staples in my bottom lip here.
You're like, okay, if you want to like fancy up your face, I gotta say you got the Grandpa Teen Wolf thing going. You don't need more. You're gonna just start looking like a real fuzzy Liberace.
Oh, I need to like freaking like
the S&M Liberace thing. Just saying.
Oh yeah. That's good. That's a compliment coming from you. You know what? I like it. I had never thought about that image for myself, but now that you've introduced it, I think I kind of like it. I need some gold nugget jewelry and some of that crazy ass shit. Some of those rocks.
Y'all were talking about sequins earlier, and it just kind of, and then you're putting that in there. Yeah. I'm thinking.
I know. And I haven't shaved. I'm like a troll scumbag. You remember? Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. All right, guys, welcome to the Roger the Wild Child Show. I do have to apologize for the late start. We're doing round two. For some reason, our connection got cut off, and I had to reset the whole show, and it's not a matter of flipping the switch on. I have to reprogram a brand new episode, so it took me a few minutes. But, you know, that's the thing about live shows. Technical shit happens, so... what are you going to do? Let's go to our chat rooms real quick. We got Don Swart.
We're here.
Yep. Hi, Wild Child family. Thank you, Don. Monica says hello again. Eileen Shapiro is here. Hey, guys.
San Diego. Okay.
Oh, my gosh. So welcome. Okay. So we have a great show today. So we have Steve Hamm joining us today. Not only is he an actor and a model, he's an Army vet as well as a Lifeline helicopter pilot. So it's great to have him on the show today. Yes, of course.
I know. It's going to be awesome talking to him.
Oh, my gosh. I cannot wait to bring him on. And he started talking to us before the show. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, I'm not saying a word. He's got too much stuff to talk about. And you guys are in for a treat. Mm-hmm. Cynthia Renee is back. And saved from the CMA Award.
I'm still here, but I'm here still.
Oh, I'm here still. Okay. Sorry, I got like 1,000 screens going on over here.
Charlie Manson Association?
All right, guys, let's get to Frankie. Are you guys ready? Here we go. Frankie.
Frankie, the weatherman. Frankie, the weatherman.
Who?
Frankie.
Who?
Frankie.
Ladies and gentlemen, Frankie McDonald.
Oh, yes, it's that time. Here he is giving us the weather. Frankie, what's going on around the world?
I'm doing great so far. It's raining in Sydney, Nova Scotia, and Halifax, New Brunswick, and Maine, New Hampshire, and Massachusetts. It's supposed to rain in Montreal all weekend long. It's been hot and humid in Richmond, Virginia, all the way down Atlanta, Georgia. It's been a lot of thunderstorms going on in the southeastern United States lately. And down in Texas, it's supposed to get a lot of rain and thunderstorms in Texas and Vancouver, British Columbia. There's a lot of rain in Pacific Northwest. It got cold air. In Ontario, got warm air, cold air, fighting each other. There's so much rain in Sapporo, Hokkaido, Japan. Siberia's getting colder. Lots of flurries and showers up Norway, Finland, Sweden. A lot of rain and windy conditions. As well, Australia's getting hotter. South Africa, New Zealand's getting warmer. Same with Argentina, because their summer starts on December 21st in Southern Hemisphere.
Now, Frankie, you just said it's raining all over the place, a lot of rain everywhere.
Awesome.
Anywhere in the world, is it raining men?
It's raining cats and dogs in some countries like Sapporo, Japan.
But it's not raining men for Imogen?
Boy, are you barking up the wrong tree.
Yeah. What kind of cats and... What kind of cats and dogs? What breed of cats and dogs is it raining?
Yes.
Dogs comes from wolves, foxes, and coyotes come from wolves, too. And cats and tigers from the same family.
That's the best answer, Frankie.
It is. It really is. You know, Frankie, last Sunday when we did the show, we were doing
pie face titties.
We were doing crow sounds, Frankie, and I played it, the clip, the next day, and we already got almost 3,000 views off of the crow. You know what? It was so much fun trying to imitate these sounds with you, and I definitely think our audience really enjoys that. So I am going to do something totally different today, all right? So we're going to do guy, or in Imogen's case, it would be girl, eats 50 carne asada burritos.
That is a specific burrito.
It's a carne asada burrito. Yes. I mean, when Frankie does his YouTube videos.
Carne asada, not carne. It's carne asada.
Carne asada. Yes.
I'm schooling you. Frankie, how would a guy do that? You, what? Are you rolling the R's now?
Like a cow going.
Oh. Okay. So you're actually creating the animal that would create the carne asada.
Yeah. The cow goes.
So if the guy eats 50 of those within 1 minute, how does that work?
That means that then it'll be going.
Okay. All right. Roger, show us how a guy would eat 50 carne asada burritos.
Let me move my microphone a little bit. Okay, here we go.
50 carne asada burritos in 1 minute. Let's go.
Okay.
Go.
I'm cooking the steak. All right. I'm chopping the guacamole with the avocados. I'm mixing it up. I'm laying out the tortillas. Okay. I'm putting the meat on the burritos.
Grab a damn burrito up and start eating.
I got the guacamole going. I got the beans, and I'm rolling them up, and I'm going eating it.
Beatboxing? Are you beatboxing burritos?
I'm only on 10. I'm only on 10. Get on three. Help me eat them, Frankie. Come on. I'm only got 25 burritos in. Frankie, eat the other 20.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good. 25 is good. 25 is good.
There you go. Was that good, Frankie? Did I do a good job? Yeah. Awesome. That's amazing.
Imogen?
Last two is on
Tuesday. Get a taste buds ready.
On Tuesday night, I was just on the Shuley show.
You were on the Shirley Show? Shirley, and what happened on the Shirley Show?
Shirley, well,
Shirley, you were.
I was bad. I love that when you make that a really dirty joke, Frankie is delightfully clean-minded, and so when you make a really dirty joke, Frankie just doesn't acknowledge it. He's blind to filthy humor. It's awesome. This is what makes Frankie
did
magic.
Somebody say something filthy? Did we miss something?
Pardon? No, it wasn't in the comments. It was on the Shuley Show. Frankie was doing something very innocent and Frankie-esque, and I turned into disgusting. And
oh, God.
That means, Roger, what happens if we get a Shuley Yeager as a guest on your show one day?
That means
it'll be the Shuley Show and Roger the Wild Child crossover.
Oh, my God. That would be so much fun. I would definitely love to have Shuley on as a guest co-host one night.
Yeah.
So,
Frankie's a modest guy. What can we say?
He is a modest guy. So, anyways, so Darren, Imogen, awesome. Burrito eating.
Dude, we don't have time. You ate all of our burritos. God,
I did.
Yeah.
You know what? Yeah, I mean, if I had to sit there and eat all those and do all that, I think
really
quickly,
though. You know what?
Really
I ate a good dozen with Frankie.
I eat burritos, I eat tacos with meat and cheese, shredded cheese, and Mexican beef.
Damn right, you do, bud.
That's right. No burritos for Frankie. He just does tacos.
I eat tacos and burritos.
Frankie, how do flamingos sound? Do you know?
I don't know who they are.
Yeah, flamingos, those birds are pink. And, yeah, they're a little bit different. That's a challenge. It's something to think about.
Some of the crows go,
You guys can check out Frankie on YouTube. Check out his channel. What channel is it, Frankie?
Dogs and Wolves.
Dogs and Wolves. And you can get his book. It's called Be Prepared by Frankie McDonald. You can go to Barnes & Noble and order it, or order it on Amazon. God, I can't talk today. I've just had too many burritos. You got the book on you, Frankie?
I'm getting the book ready. Here it is.
There it is. There you go. Be Prepared by Frankie McDonald. Okay?
Hey, Frankie, I'm going to leave you with this, too. All right? I am the champion in eating 2,000 corn on the cobs, and man, when I start, I got it. I'm just telling you, I'm going to show you that the next time, okay? Because that's my gimmick.
He's the corn cob eating champion of the world,
okay?
Yes,
yeah. I'm going to show you next time.
Next time, Frankie.
Best
all right, Frankie.
Luck.
Yeah,
best
that's
of luck.
Me.
Yeah, I'm Frankie. Big G. You're the Rock and Wild Child Show.
That's it,
Frankie. The weatherman.
Oh, you got to love Frankie.
Hey. That was classic. Hey, you did a good job, you know, cooking the carne asada, doing
I
all that stuff.
I was trying to do what Frankie would do on YouTube, you know?
I'm just impressed that Darren is the king corn cobber, yeah, unlike his high school reputation as the king corn holer. That took
you
way too long.
You remember that.
It did.
I was there.
I know it took a long time, and I think that's what you liked about it. I mean, what can I say? Good Lord, you! Oh my God! Thank God.
Yes,
Frankie's
Monica, you can order the book online on Amazon.com and go to Barnes and Noble. They can order you a copy as well. All right. So that's Frankie's book.
Let's see.
Brenda, hello from Arizona. Hello, Brenda. All righty. So we have an amazing guest today. We're going to bring him on. We always have amazing guests, okay? I mentioned earlier, he is a Army vet, a helicopter pilot. He's an actor, and he is a model. Please welcome to the show, Stephen P. Ham. Hello, sir.
Thank you. Appreciate you having me on. I am honored and humbled,
Stephen.
Actually.
You're honored and humble.
Thanks, Darren. We broke Darren.
Great. We did. And thank you so much for hanging around with all the technical difficulties today. It just happens to the best of us.
Oh, yeah, that's for sure. Actually, I was rolling backstage listening to you guys and made me hungry with all the taco and burrito talk. You guys save me any?
Yes, we definitely got some burritos for you. Did you want some salsa on that, Stephen?
By all means. I mean, everything with the sour cream and everything. I love Mexican food.
So let's talk about, your career.
What's that?
Go ahead, Darren. Go ahead. Finish.
No. I'm ready to talk about his career. I was just going to say you can't put beans with carne asada in a burrito, though.
That's true. You know what I mean? With carne asada, you got to throw in the onions and all that stuff. Yeah. So the veggies.
Yeah,
and all that stuff.
You know, normal stuff.
Of course.
Anyway.
So, Stephen.
No, okay. You don't do that either. Carne asada is carne asada. It's steak. It's steak burrito. Anyway, that's cool. Everybody's different.
Oh man.
So Steven, let's talk about your career as a Army vet, because you spent 23 and a half years as an Army vet.
I did. Yes. That was a long 23 years too, I'll tell you. Man. First of all, I also want to say hi to Eileen. I appreciate everything that
Jimmy
do for
absolutely
for me on the PR basis and everyone else who joined in. Thanks for joining in. 23 and a half years, long time. Joined right out of high school. And I think I realized at that point that college really wasn't for me. So, of course, followed my kind of my dad's footsteps. He was in the Air Force, though, so I went the Army route, took the harder route, of course, go figure. Started off as a helicopter mechanic. And then, you know, after you hang around pilots for a while and see what they do and everything and hear their stories, you know, you get the itch to learn how to fly. And so after 8 years, I went ahead and applied to be a pilot, thankfully got accepted, and the rest was history with that. So it was interesting.
Excellent.
So I saw on your resume, I'm looking at your resume here under special skills. It says that you flew a Bell 206, 407, and AW-109E. What was the top speed on the 109?
Our top speed, both engines working, is 168 knots. So it's about 200 miles an hour, roughly. that's the civilian light by helicopter there. The one I flew in the military, it can go up to 120 knots. It wasn't built for speed. It was just built for agility, basically. We did a lot of reconnaissance operations, so sneak and peek stuff.
Yeah, I was noticing, I was looking at the specs on some of what you were flying, and the 109, I know, like just from looking at it, it looks like it's designed for intense speed, which is super cool. But then, maneuverability was the highlight of the other one there. So that's awesome.
Yeah, it was it was a big change. The one I flew in the Army, the Kiowit, single engine aircraft. So it's got its, you know, when you have an emergency with that thing, obviously you have to know what to do on the spot, because you can go down pretty quickly. With the 109, we do have two engines. So, you know, if we do happen to lose one, we still have the capability to kind of keep flying until we can find a safe place to land. So, but going to two engines was a unique experience for me. I really enjoy flying it. It's just a smooth aircraft.
Sweet.
So what made you decide to transition? And, you know, I mean, you go from being a Army vet and you decide, I just want to be an actor. I mean, obviously you go from one extreme to the other. How did that happen?
That's probably the most famous question I get asked all the time, or most common question, I should say. You know, I don't know, really. no, actually, it was kind of a spur of the moment thought, believe it or not. I was about 6 months out from retiring, and I just said, you know, hey, acting sounds kind of cool. Let's give this a shot. So I did a Google search. I was still in Fort Campbell, Kentucky then, so Tennessee. And I found some acting schools in the Nashville area, and happened to find one called the Actors Workshop. And it was run by a guy named Alan Dysart. He used to be a full contract player in All My Children back in the day.
Okay.
So he would get local people in and do weekend workshops, and you basically do cold reads. So you get a script you've never seen before, and you can kind of go on stage and act it out. So I did that for the weekend. And as they say, the acting bug hit me and I got hooked. I'm like, oh, this is something I really want to pursue. But of course, I was still in the service and I was about to retire and I had to do a transition. So it was going to be on hold for a little while, but it was still in the back of my head that, it's something that I definitely want to do and pursue, you know, part-time initially, then, you know, maybe full-time, you know, if the opportunity presents itself. So that's kind of how it happened.
Okay.
That's awesome.
So I know that you did some acting in the movie Crisis in the Valley. I'm just looking over your list of some of the movies you've been in, Taken Over and Acts of Violence. Tell us a little bit about some of your roles in those films.
With Crisis in the Valley, that was actually my first speaking role in a film of any kind. So that was interesting. And that I got cast in that just by responding to a friend's Facebook post, actually. The director, they had lost their other character, and he saw my comment. He saw my profile pic, and he's like, hey, you might fit this role. So he contacted me, said, hey, would you be interested? And I said, sure. He's like, well, let me send you the script first to see if you can, you know, work with that. And it was somewhat, I don't know if vulgar is the right word, but the words weren't very nice, you would say to a woman. So I was a little hesitant at first, but just like, it's not all that bad. So I said, sure. And the rest of that is history. So it it was interesting just to film that, you know, being able to have a speaking role. That was fun. The Acts of Violence with Bruce Willis, that was probably the highlight of my career at the present time. I was supposed to be a background actor for that, a detective. And at the last minute, the director decided that myself and another girl, he wanted to actually have us in the scene, which we didn't realize at first. So long story short, basically, I got to escort out Cole Hauser out of the house. And
Oh, really?
We shot that scene, you know, probably 5-10 times until they figure they want to get it right. But just seeing how a bigger budget project, you know, works and how it functions is just really interesting. And I didn't say anything after the fact. I didn't want to post anything in case, you know, either I got cut from the scene or it fell through or something. But a director friend of mine said, hey, were you in this movie? And I said, well, maybe. And she sent me a screenshot. I'm like, yeah, I guess I did make it. So that was interesting. Yeah, I enjoyed that. That was a fun night.
You know, what I notice is people who are in acting or they go and they do this certain role for a certain movie or whatever. And you find out that what they cast for is not what they end up being in. And and you're finding that to happen more often, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Anytime I see a casting call and I see what character I could fit and I submit myself, and next thing you know, they're like, well, you know, we kind of see you more maybe with this. Would you be willing to change? And, you know, casting people, a good casting person knows their job, and they can see, you can have to take them at their word and like, yeah, sure, I'll take that. I mean, they're going to cast you for something. You might as well take it, even if it's not what you wanted. I mean, and you just take the role and you make it the best you can. So, but yeah, that happens a lot.
So where did modeling come into play?
We wanted you to come in and, you know, shoot these guys out and take 20 people out, but we decided we want you to be a tree today. So can you just stand there and just kind of...
Sure. Be the best tree you ever wanted.
That's the spirit. See, most actors, man, again, sure, what kind of tree? Eucalyptus? I don't know, what are we talking about? But, you know, music's kind of the same crazy way, you know. You think you're into a direction, and next thing you know, you're going to a publisher, and they go... Man, if these three songs right here, if this one song sounded like these three songs, we'd be in there. And then you go to the next publisher and they see it completely different. They're like, man, the one that they hated, they're going, if this one sounded that great, man. I mean, it's all just who you end up with and what their flavor is and what they love and what they think you're going to be good at. Because I've seen it all switch around like that. I'll get you a deal if you could really kind of focus on this style. Then you go to the next once again, you know. Oh, no. I don't like that. We like this. And so the other guy liked what the other guy hated. So I was like, yeah, how do you do this? You know, acting's a little bit different, but.
A little bit, but kind of the same. I mean, just depends. Yeah. You just, I think any good actor, you know, will, if they get cast for something else, will just be happy that they got cast for something. You know, you have a job now. So, you know, make the most of it, because I think 95% of the hustle is, you know, is finding a project to audition for, you know, and the other 5% is getting booked and then, you know, being able to be on set and act. So
how many times have you got turned down? Can you say,
oh my God, I've lost count. I'll be honest with you. Yeah. Numerous times.
Were you discouraged or did you just keep going forward with it?
At first, any young actor gets discouraged. That's just common, you know. Mm-hmm. A lot of them, you know, people have thin skin, and that's not going to make it in this business at all. So I think, you know, everyone has their ups and downs, and you just got to, you know, work with it, just run through it. And a lot of people, the advice is, you know, you just keep going. You could have 300 rejections, and just that one yes, you know, could launch something, you know, big for you, or maybe not. Maybe you just have that one and then nothing. You know, I hate to use the term flaky, but it can be a flaky business, you know. So you just have to just, you know, roll with it. Mm-hmm. And Bryan Cranston did an interview on YouTube, and it was some of the best advice that I've ever heard is that, you know, once he realized that if he gets asked to go, this was way before it became big, but if you go in for an audition, you have the chance to showcase your talent. That's your spot for, you know, 5-10 minutes, whatever the case is. Make a bold choice, do your performance, deliver the best you can, walk out, and then forget about it. You know, but if you have it in your head or on your shoulders that I've got to book this role, you're not going to get it, because the camera can see it and the casting directors can see it. You know, just go in there, do it, forget about it, and go away. He said once he had that mentality, he was booking stuff left and right, and he was busier than ever. So I go with it in with the same mentality as that. I come in prepared, do my lines, make a bold choice, forget about it. And if something good comes, then great. If not, then so be it, you know. But you just got to persevere and just drive through. And you know, it's a marathon. You just got to treat it like that. So
You said something really, really important too. And, you know, it kind of parallels into, you know, the other side of the arts that I've grown up with in music and stuff. But I remember right before my brother joined the band Chicago that he was with for 32 years, he had gotten an audition. I think it was with Scritti Politti, and they were huge, you know, in the 80s, you know, and had a couple big hits out. And I think that's the band, but it might have been Oingo Boingo or one of those guys. It was either, Oingo Boingo or Scritti Politti, one of those guys. I could be wrong, but one of those. But anyway, you know, he went to, you know, a couple auditions, knew something, this isn't all the details. I'll just cut right to the chase with it, though. Yeah, you're in, you know, and it's going to be good. We just got to deal with the manager and do all this stuff. And then the next thing you know, somebody came in at the 11th hour and it was out. Well, guess what? It wasn't long after that that he got this 32-year career with Chicago as the new tenor lead singer. So that not getting that gig, you know, for a split second, you're like, oh, my God, because they were huge. They were on top of the, you know, Oingo Boingo, I think it was. And next thing you know, you're like, how long did that last, though, really? Oingo Boingo, you know?
Right.
I was like, okay, here was their little five-year period. And so I'm just saying, like, you know, you're bummed, but then is there a good reason behind not getting that gig? And, you know, I see that happen a lot. I just
other doors open for you if they're not where you're – yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right, if you're working on a B film and all of a sudden – You get a B film, and next thing you know, you're not available for the A film, you know? So it's like, if you don't get the B film, maybe that timing will just pass, and happens to a lot of people that way. You know, you're bummed that you don't get it because you want what you can get. But anyway, it's kind of that way, you know?
So what genre are you most interested in?
I am a thriller genre primarily, I think. I like those kind of mystery suspense type stuff. That always intrigues me, especially when it's like government conspiracy and stuff. I'm a big Jack Ryan fan series. I love that stuff. It's more or less a horror. But it's not like gore horror. It's the you know, suspense horror, you know, the jump in your face at the last minute, you don't know what to expect type horror.
That's like psychological thriller.
You like those kind of horrors.
Yeah, more of a psychological thriller. That's very cool. There's so much more to it. Slasher films are great, but when there's more story and there's more suspense, it's just atmosphere is a character unto itself, and it's just such a more detailed genre.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think slasher, probably back in the 80s, slashers were the big thing, and I just watched like a documentary on many of the slasher films, the Jason series and the Freddy series and stuff like that. I think back then, you know, that was breakout stuff for them. But I think now there's still an audience and a fan club for that. But for me, I like the thriller suspense better. You know, I want to have a good, some kind of meaty story to follow as well, you know, and that's what works. But yeah, the thriller suspense stuff really works for me. So government conspiracy, you know, all that kind of good stuff, secret agent stuff is kind of cool too. But that's kind of where I lean toward, you know.
Have you done roles that were totally opposite of what you normally do?
Not yet. No. I'm open to about anything. I played a mayor. That was kind of fun. That was in Common Creed. That was another indie film filmed right there over on the east side of Cleveland. But no, other than that, you would think I get a lot of military roles, but I really haven't yet, which is kind of weird. Yeah, no. Cop detective is usually primarily in my wheelhouse, or father, you know, husband type stuff. But yeah, I mean, I'm pretty much open to just about anything, but I do have my limits. So,
you know, one thing you do besides acting is you're currently a life flight helicopter pilot and helping saving lives. I commend you on doing that. And you have such a balance between your family and trying to do acting and saving people's lives. I mean, how do you do it all?
That's a good question. I feel like I get asked that a lot too. It's about time management. You know, I have a flexible work schedule. I got a week on, week off. So this is my week off. So I get to do all these interviews and work on acting, work on, you know, audiobook and voice narration stuff. And so that fills my empty time, keeps me out of trouble as much as possible. So, but I do have a supportive wife in the process, you know. So if I have a audition or something to go for or a gig to go for, you know, I let her know. And, you know, she's like, hey, you know, enjoy, have fun. And we kind of, she'll ask me like, well, what's your social calendar like this month, whatever else. So I'll say, well, this is what I have going on. And then we'll try to bounce it off each other and we'll just make it work, you know. So she's very understanding and I have to appreciate that and commend her for that. Because
you know, having a partner like that, you know, in your life and being able to have that one sole person that be able to support everything that you do is amazing. And so, you know, a lot of, you know, respect to your wife and everything and, you know, and for her just to be there. And because you don't know, because I mean, if you're a helicopter pilot and there's something going on, you got to go. I mean, it's not like, oh, I clock in, clock out. Right. So, you know, if there's an emergency, you got to go for it.
Well, when I'm actually on, we call it a hitch, a 7-day hitch. So I do 3 days and I go into four nights. So when I'm at work, I mean, obviously my focus is work. I don't think about anything else or you know, and all that stuff. You got to be prepared when the call comes in. But yeah, when I'm my week off of work, it's you leave that behind and you just focus on your other interests and hobbies. Mm-hmm. So. But the one question that she always asks me if I say I have an audition or a gig for something, she goes, are you getting paid? And she, within the first few seconds of my expression, she'll like, okay, enough said. you know, when you first start out, it's like you have to accept almost everything non-paid because you're just trying to build a resume. You're trying to build experience.
Right.
And then eventually, you know, paying gigs start coming around, maybe, you know, $100, $200 here and there and this and that, you know. And but, you know, there was a talent coach that, you know, I follow on Facebook. Her name is Wendy Elaine Wright, I believe. And she said, you know, it's a marathon, you know, so a high profile or high budget director is not just going to hire, you know, a 2-year actor for a lead role in a film. That's just not going to happen. You know, he's going to go with experience and go with what he knows. And, you know, so once you start paying your dues and get up there, you know, I've been doing this for about almost 10 years now, you know. So hopefully it's time for me to get breaking some bigger, but you know, you just got to roll with the punches, you know, and take whatever you can get, you know, and after a while you can start making maybe some decisions and turning some stuff down. But yeah, so just, you know, keep with it and hope for the best.
You know, tell me a little bit about the YouTube science fiction web series that you play Dr. Bradley in. It's called Cold Blooded. How did that role come about for you?
So I subscribe to a website called Backstage. It's a pretty big casting site for independent projects, basically. And I saw this project come around and they're looking for a dad slash doctor type of role. And I was like, well, I can fit that bill. You know, they want a white guy, you know, in probably 30 to 40 range. So I was like, yeah, at the time I was good for it. So, you know, you get the sides and I rehearsed the script and I sent the audition in and the director initially liked it. She goes, well, I like it, but, you know, see if you can make an adjustment for me, you know, and send something back for me on Monday. So I did. I worked on it, sent it in, and she liked it. And so next thing you know, I'm, you know, getting on a plane to New York to film the pilot episode. And it was fun. I mean, I got there the day before, you know, saw some sights. Next day, all day filming and pretty much most of the night. And then next day, you know, I went to go see the Statue of Liberty and I went home.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. But she had 10 episodes written, but I guess she didn't realize at the time that she didn't have all the funding for it because she did want to pay us. And so she put the project on hold, and I'm not really sure if we're going to do any more filming again or
not. How many episodes are you in right now?
Just one. She only filmed one.
Okay.
So
is it on YouTube? It's on YouTube now, though, right?
It is on YouTube. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So our audience will be able to check that one out.
Sure. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. No, it was fun. I play the doctor slash dad. I lost my wife, and so I'm trying. It's kind of a supernatural type thriller. Mm-hmm. So it was a pretty good story once I read through most of it and what's how it's supposed to end up. But my daughter holds a secret to something, and she doesn't realize it yet. So it was going to unfold as the episodes came out.
So what's your plans for the future as far as acting? What kind of roles are you looking at wanting to do? Obviously, you know, every actor wants to, you know, make it up and get into the big screen and stuff like that. Is there maybe a certain actor that you would like to be able to share the screen with?
Yeah, I've actually thought about this question a number of times, and, you know, two people come to mind, so I would love to share the screen with, as far as a male actor goes, Denzel Washington.
Oh, yeah.
That would be incredible. And as far as the females go, it would be Jessica Chastain. She is phenomenal as well. Every role she's ever taken on, she just gives it, you know, 150%. And they're just great, you know. So just to be able to share, you know, a screen with them or a set with them would just be incredible.
So why Denzel? So what do you like so much about him?
He's such a professional. I mean, if you watch any of his movies, I mean, he doesn't make a bad movie ever, really.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and he's so versatile, you know. I mean, going from, you know, like the crazy cop, you know, in Training Day. I mean, that was an incredible role. That's so outside his box and comfort zone. And then, you know, no matter what else he plays, you know, I loved him in the Equalizer, you know. I mean, calm, cool, and collected, you know, but deadly as hell.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, yeah, he just commands that presence on the screen. And he just, when you start watching him, you just can't stop. You know, it's like, wow, give me more. And the same with Jessica.
He definitely steals the show.
Oh, that's yeah, true. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I see that professionalism that they display, you know, and deliver. And, you know, that's what I want to strive to, you know. So, you know, I'm not looking at this as, you know, trying to, you know, win Academy Awards someday or whatever. I just want to be able to, you know, do the job, be an artist, you know, and people to enjoy what they watch, you know, and they can actually relate to the character, you know,
mm-hmm.
and say, yeah, that was a good job. That's just not some, you know, pretty boy on screen, whatever else they just has just because. So that's my ultimate goal.
So I always ask everybody, you know, when they come on the show mostly is, you know, obviously we've gone through a transition in the world these days. What did you do during the downtime during COVID?
Well, fortunately for me, I still was able to remain employed. So basically, you know, we transport sick people, you know, hospital to hospital, mainly that's what we do. Mm-hmm. So, but for the first couple of months, the height of COVID, we weren't doing much at all because people were just staying home. So there was no transports getting done. But once other companies started doing transports, we had to figure out how we could protect ourselves, you know, as employees, you know, and not catch the virus. So,
right.
Obviously, I got myself vaccinated, so I am fully vaccinated, which actually nowadays, you know, to get cast on a project, they want you either to take a COVID test or be fully vaccinated. So that works in my favor as well because I already am. And I got, you know, the card to prove it. Mm-hmm. So that's just another, you know, building block or you know, check mark they can sign off. But so, yeah, we got vaccinated. And then we wear these protective masks anytime the patient's on board. So, you know, and I'm happy to say, and I've said this on social media a few times, you know, and I don't make a big stink about it. But for me, you know, it's kind of like being a front lines on it with an ER nurse. You know, we are exposed to potentially, you know, we transport COVID positive patients. So,
right.
And they're not that far away from me, you know, I mean, mostly with the crew in the back, but I'm fairly close to them as well. But being vaccinated and wearing a mask, you know, and just, you know, keeping my, you know, hands clean, all the normal stuff that you need to do, you know, I haven't caught the virus, you know, I haven't got sick like that. So my soapbox is that you follow the rules like that.
Yeah.
Everything will be okay. You know, but there's unfortunately so much misinformation on the news and stuff that, you know, people don't know what to believe anymore. So, but mm-hmm. I'm here to say that from a first person point of view, it works, you know? So, but now, you know, transports have increased, you know, people are getting out and doing stuff. And, you know, I think a couple months ago I had, you know, my base alone did 46 transports and I did half of them. So,
oh, wow.
It was just, it's a busy time.
I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. Yeah, we did 40 this week and 20 left.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of
it's a double-edged sword for me. If I'm working really well, then, you know, it's good for the company, but then someone is either sick or hurt and, you know, you feel bad for them, obviously, but at least we're there to help them, you know, as much as possible. So that's the positive side.
So where did the modeling come into play for you?
Right. I mean, if you're taking somebody from...
Well, that's part of the agency that I work with. They're a talent/modeling agency. So when I signed in with them, they have professionals there that teach you acting classes, you know, and how to act in front of the camera, how to do this for the acting world. So that helps. And the modeling stuff, you know, they teach you how to model, basically. So I don't do a whole lot of that. Now, I couldn't be like a runway model because that just wouldn't work for me. There's a certain type they look for that, but I can do commercial modeling all day, you know, for a company or for a product, right. And that's not a big deal. So, but
he's
then again,
he's not telling you the whole truth. He saw me doing runway model one day, and I'm the guy that inspired him. And no when one. He saw me doing like some sports stuff and looking at the watch and pointing out, he went, "That's the guy I want to be." You could tell him it's okay.
You're right. You're absolutely right. Sorry, I'm busted. Yep.
But in Steve's defense, no one can compete with Darren in heels.
That's true. You're right. Yeah.
I'll give you that one. I don't do the heels. But I mean, I wouldn't mind doing some fitness.
She's
modeling.
Seen
I mean,
it, so
I can work out.
And trust me, it's.
Yeah, I saw the weightlifting. Oh, gosh, I saw the weightlifting is an interest of yours. What's your average? Like, what's your routine like? Is it a daily thing? Is it weekly?
It used to be daily, but as you get older, it's harder to recover from that, for me anyway. So I basically do every other day. It ended up being three times a week if I can make it. So I just went today, you know, and did my did some chest and legs and stuff. So thing is, with my job, though, you know, we can't exceed a weight limit of 240 pounds per employee for the crew. Mm-hmm. So I got to keep that weight in check. So I don't, when I lift, it's mainly for to keep tone, basically, not to increase size. So, you know, it's basically it's maintenance. Exactly. Yeah. So it's more reps and, you know, and lighter weight. And, you know, my wife said I spend too much time there because I end up spending like 2 hours, you know, one time, but it's not because I'm just going nuts. I do cardio, take my time and, you know, do every set, you know, kind of relax a little bit and just, you know, make the most of it. Cause that's kind of my time away from life. That's my,
yeah. That's your time out.
That's my Zen time. Exactly.
It's Steve time.
If I wasn't doing that, I'd probably go nuts.
Well, part of the fun of doing like your routine by with the timing and the pacing of it and the high rep, low weight volume, that does build a really really condensed strength. So without being super bulky, it does make your muscles incredibly strong. It makes all the fibers just tighten up and they're just so much more, there's so much more endurance in there. And realistically, cardio is one of the things that most gym rats kind of overlook and just focus on like the beach muscles or have the goals, right. But the cardio is so crucial. And
that's what I'm focused on. Yeah.
Drinking doesn't count.
Somebody said, they go, "Do you have an eating disorder?" I go, "I do. I'll take disorder of pizza, disorder of chicken, right. Disorder of this." Yeah. I'm just, anyway.
Yeah, I think 20 years ago, you know, if I look at a cover of Muscle and Fitness, I'm like, I want to be what that guy looks like, you know. But when you learn about what it takes to be like that, it's insane. You know, I mean, if you ever read up on Dwayne Johnson, you know, and what he goes through daily to look like does, it's insane, you know. But he's got the time and money to do it, though, too. So, but I don't want to look like that. I mean, not anymore. So, but like you said, you know, the I'm in there for maintenance and stuff. And the cardio is definitely a plus. I use the elliptical better because it's lower impact on my knees. Because if I run too much, my right knee just starts screaming at me. And then my wife starts yelling at me, like, don't be an idiot. Stop. So,
yeah, the elliptical is really, it's definitely a solid go-to. It's really replaced a lot of treadmills because of the low impact on the joints. And it does give you the, it does like, they do tend to be programmable. So you can go for like strength and endurance as well without that damage to the joints.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was skeptical about it until I started, but now that I'm doing it, you know, 15 to 20 minutes at a time, that's what works for me. And that's how I get warmed up. So I stick to a pretty regimented routine in the gym, and it's more like a lifestyle for me now than anything else. So if I can't get to the gym, then I start kind of bugging out.
Oh yeah,
well, you have to do cardio if you're going to try to eat 50 burritos. So
true, very true.
Yeah. I like the skeptical over the elliptical. I choose the skeptical bike. Sorry, forgive me.
No.
So you know, Veterans Day is coming up, Steve, so I have to say thank you for your service and still servicing people in need out there doing the transport. So I really commend you on all the work that you put in for helping others. So
thanks. Yeah, it's rewarding. Sometimes it gets tasking, I guess, for me, especially on the night shifts, you know, when you can be up all night possibly flying. But, you know, it's what you sign up to do. So I work with some great people. I mean, they're really top-notch medical professionals, so I learn a lot from them. I do not have any medical training, just put that out there, so I just fly it and that's it, you know. But it's a team effort, so, you know, they need help carrying some bags, they need help with this, whatever. I help to a point, but then there's a point where, you know, it's like, okay, I'm not getting involved with that because now you're getting to medical stuff and I'm, you know, don't need a lawsuit happening, but you know, we all know where our jobs are, what our parts are, and we all do it. And, you know, it's just fun. So
that's gotta be a rush though. And does your adrenaline get going when it's like, how do you get notified, man, that you've got to get from this hospital now? They got to go now. We're taking somebody, or are we going somewhere to pick somebody up? And what's that adrenaline like? It's got to be intense, man.
At first it was. It still is to a point. The two types of calls that really gets us going, like 100, 150% are, you know, when you call for an accident scene, because you never know what to expect. And the, you know, the people, the cops and the first responders there, they want you there as soon as possible. So you get that call. It's like, boom, okay, I checked the weather. You know, make sure it's good, and then we head out. The other calls are for what we call STEMIs. That's basically it's heart attack and stroke people at hospitals. So the crew, you know, we need to get in the aircraft off the ground in 10 minutes, which we do. And then once they get to the bedside, you know, it's supposed to be 10 minutes or less for them to package the patient up and get out of there and head out. So,
oh, wow. Yes.
So stroke, STEMIs, and trauma calls are definitely, you know, the time sensitive. You know, you got to get out and go. It gets hard at night sometimes, you know, because we do get to sleep while we're at work, thankfully, you know. But, you know, once you go to bed and the phone rings, it's like I got to be able to get up, check weather. You know, if weather's good, then they get the patient info. Then we get the aircraft pushed out, get it, you know, get started, and we head out, you know, all in 10 minutes. And people sometimes say, how the heck do you do that? You just condition yourself. That's about it. You know, you just get focused. Yeah. So,
wow.
You got to expect the unexpected.
It's your job, and you know you got to just get up and jump, man. I mean, it's like critical. It's life and death, man. I mean, I know, but that's a big thing, man. You know, I'd want you there to get up for me. I'd be like, get up, wake up, Kevin. I gotta get there. I'm sorry, because that's such a big deal. You do. I shouldn't be making a joke out of it because
no, it's you know, yeah. People want you there, you know. And thing is, you know, if the weather's not good, then we can't go. But you know, we're all.
How often does that happen? That the weather's not good. I mean, how often? That would be a horrible thing, but
Well, we're also instrument rated pilots. So, you know, like with the, when you fly in a commercial airline, you know, they go up to the clouds and stuff. We can do that as well. Not for like an accident scene per se, but like for hospital transfers, we are qualified to do that kind of stuff. So that gives us an added edge to do patient transports. But during the winter time when it gets cold, you know, and there's an icing level and it's an icing level is low, we can't fly in that. So a lot of times the like December, January, February time frames, we're not doing much flying because we just can't go. So the med crew will go by the ground, you know, an ambulance or a squad or something instead.
So when you're in a helicopter going to a wreck, you know, what do? You look for like open space on the street to land or something, or how does that work?
No, they have a LZ landing zone set up for us, so they're supposed to. So once we're about 5 minutes out, I usually get on the radio and talk to them and say, hey, you know, we're about 5 minutes out, you know, can you give me an LZ brief, you know, and patient info? And they usually tell you how the LZ is set up, you know, by cones or whatever they have, where it's at in the field or on a road. And then they try to give me any kind of obstacles that are in the air, you know, a cell phone tower, or there's wires here or this or that, just so I have an idea of what I should expect. And then when I get there, you know, I'll do at least one turnaround just to confirm what they tell me and then or identify anything more. And the med crew is looking out as well. And then if everything's good, we land, you know, where they have it set up, and then the med crew goes and does their thing. So daytime is not too bad. Of course, nighttime, it adds that.
Yeah, I was going to say nighttime.
Complexity. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's just, you know, that your training kicks in and everyone looks out for each other, you know, to get it done safely. So, but I think if someone were actually going with us to see how we did it, they'd be impressed slash like, oh my God, overwhelmed.
Yeah.
But it's
my brother-in-law, sadly, I mean, he's here, but and he's fine. But on his side of the family, you know, the heart attacks are rampant, man. And he had a full-blown widowmaker at 44 years old, that young. And they had to transport him from, you know, one side of the city all the way up to downtown Nashville. And they asked if somebody wanted to – they got him all stabilized, and it was code blue right before we got in there, man. It was just, like, insane. And they jumped him, man, and got him going. Everybody was running into the room. It was pretty intense. And then once they got him all stabilized, got up in, you know, in his leg and got his heart started again, they needed to get him up to downtown Nashville to, like, the best heart place that you can get up there. I forgot what hospital that was off the top of my head. But anyway, so they asked if my mother-in-law or my wife wanted to – ride in the ambulance with Steve. He was, you know, they keep you kind of really out of it, but enough to communicate, you know what I'm talking about. But, and they didn't want to go in there because they're freaking out, you know, rightly so. It's my wife's brother and my mother-in-law's son. So I got in there with him, and we were going like 100-something miles an hour in this ambulance up these streets, man. You know, I've never gone that fast, you know, when I was hammered driving up there. But now I'm in this back of this ambulance, and these guys are just moving it at 100 miles an hour plus. And you know, wild, man, the sirens are going and people are just kind of parting the sea, and you just are cruising. You don't even feel like you're going 100 miles an hour. That's what's so crazy. You know, you're moving really fast, but it feels like you're just kind of just getting there. And it was a wild experience being in that ambulance and going up there with that kind of a deal going. Pretty intense.
So, Stephen, what is your plans? Do you have any special projects coming up here that you want to kind of promote?
The one I can promote for sure right now is I am recently cast in an audio drama called Dead Exit. Doug Shiloh, he is the director, if I'm not mistaken, of the project. So that was through with Jimmy Starr and with their collaboration. He recommended that he get in touch with me. And so I submitted some stuff to him. He liked it. And actually, I just, you know, finished sending him the edited version of for my character. And so that's going to be an audio drama. Not sure when it's actually going to be finished. But their plans are to make it into a actual motion picture as well at some point.
Oh, nice.
Maybe. He said he secured some funding for it already. So that's always a plus. So we'll see how that works out.
Okay.
But the one thing I've noticed, you know, in this business is that, you know, it things can change in a moment. So, you know, you never at first you think, oh, great, I'm casting this. Everything's going to work out fine. And things change. So, you know, you go with the flow. If it doesn't work out, then, You know, don't get upset. There's always something else that's around the corner, and you got to hustle for it. I think that's the main advice I give anyone. You just got to keep that hustle going, no matter how bad it seems, because there's something out there that needs you. You know, casting directors, they have a job to do. They want to fill it, and when you walk in, they're hoping you're that answer for them. So, you know, give them that answer. Say, hey, I'm your person. I'm your guy. I'm your girl. You know, and just, you know, and do it. So, it's just a mindset you got to have.
Okay. Well, Steve Hamm, I appreciate you taking your time. And even with all our technical issues today, that you still hung around and was still able to do this interview with us. So thank you once again.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. Like I said, I was honored and humbled, especially seeing all the other guests you have on. I mean, and their caliber and stuff is pretty, pretty incredible. Besides, I also like your theme music. It's pretty rad.
Thank you. I like it too.
Yeah, all joking aside, man, thanks for your service and what you're doing out there. I know I can be bombastic and very loud, but thank you, brother, for your service. Oh,
no. Most welcome. It was an honor to serve, and I worked with some really great people. The Army taught me some really good skills to have and traits to follow with, you know, so I take those with me into the world, and I also try to, showcase that for when I go and, audition for stuff, so. I try to promote myself as best I can, what you see is what you get. And if you like it, great. If not, that's fine too. And that's kind of how I live the life, it's do my thing. And if you don't like it, oh, well, then it's not for you, but there's other people that do. So I think once you have that mental freedom like that, you can do anything you want.
Exactly. Thanks again, Steve. You take that's care great, now. Man. You have a great evening. Enjoy your Veterans Day.
Thanks. You as well. Appreciate you. Thank having
you, buddy.
Me. Good night, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I know. Wow. As crazy as we can get, what an incredible guy that is, man. What a, what he's done. I like his art side of him, and then his professional side of him. What he does is just like incredible. It's wild to think about the two, all those things being married into one, human being. It's great.
In one person, he can, he's got like a business side of him, a professional side, and then all of a sudden he's got his family life that he's got going on. And then of course he's got, doing the entertainment business and just trying to juggle everything and being one person and doing it all. And,
Well, he's figured it out.
He's got a lucky wife though. His wife supports him. That's amazing.
Yeah.
It's kind of his career path as an actor doing the serious route with the more heavy roles. As opposed to starting in comedy, if you go serious, it's a lot easier to do comedy later, but getting out of comedy to be taken seriously, it doesn't usually work. Like, it crippled Ed O'Neill's career for a very long time. After Married with Children, he couldn't get cast for anything but comedy, but he came from drama background, but being in such a recognizable role, anytime he appeared in a serious role, the audience would automatically start laughing because he had such a foothold of comedy. So choosing the more serious route first is a really good choice to do because you have more options that way. You're not so limited or typecast. So excellent, excellent choice there, Steve.
You okay there, Darren?
I'm just saying she's.
Yep.
She knows. She knows a lot more. And I'm just telling you, it's amazing what she can come up with. But look at that. That was awesome.
Thanks.
You got intelligence that you're smoking? What is that?
She's like this.
What? Well,
yeah.
I'm listening. I was loving listening to Steve talk, and he's got a really solid voice for doing voiceover, voice work, radio. Video games is such a huge market. There's so much work for actors in video games. And it's all voice acting. And Steve has a really clear voice that just resonates. And so there'd be a lot of roles available to him in that route as well, which is so cool. And then, these serious or scary roles. Okay. You remember Ninja Turtles as a kid watching it?
Yes.
No.
When you were 40. So
I didn't watch it. I hated it. And when it came out for my kids, I was like, nah, that's lame. Anyway.
Okay. The voice of the Shredder, the villain from so many people's childhoods, that was Uncle Phil on Fresh Prince. He had that voice.
Really?
Yeah.
You know, yeah, Roger, yeah. I am convinced we need to start smoking weed. Look at all this information.
Look at how much intelligence.
I mean, my God, man, you know, it's like, yeah, that makes you stupid. Listen to her. She's like the freaking encyclopedia here. It's insane. And I'm like taking 2 second pauses to come back with something. And she's like, geez, is she doing some devil's dandruff over there too? No, anyway, but hey, I'm just
kidding. Devil's dandruff. Devil's lettuce, diddly doodly.
Yeah, Devil's lechuga. That's in Spanish. Diablo lechuga.
Oh, gosh.
Do you have some Diablo lechuga?
I gotta say, like, looking at Steve's resume here under special skills for marksmanship, like, under marksmanship, he's listed as being like super proficient with like a Beretta 9mm, M16, M4, M249. Like, okay, aside from the 9mm, that's a high caliber stop.
It is.
I mean, I'm not a fan of the smaller calibers. I mean, I can kick the shit out of so many people with a Beretta 70, which is a 22, but I just don't like the 22s because it's small. However, this motherfucker can handle an M16. He's listed marksmanship with this shit. Like, that's awesome.
She knows her arsenal. She's a Canadian, man. Where they won't even let you have a damn gun. She knows her shit.
Right?
Okay. Contrary to popular belief, there are shitloads of guns here. The requirements for getting them, it's very different than in the US. It's really strict here. Like, it's stupidly strict. But there are shitloads of them here. And we've had legal weed forever. And guess what? Prostitution is legal. Yeah, most people don't know that, or most Americans don't know that, but it's legal here, and it has been for a long time. There's a lot of weird shit going on here. I did not know. Yeah,
Roger. Like, Roger, see, now you can go up there and get your prostitutes going, and you won't get in trouble and thrown in jail. All those guy prostitutes you've been looking for, they got them up there.
Okay, Darren.
Take a toke. Hit up a hoe and then head to the ring. Like, and our viewers wake up.
Oh my God, we just took this way too far. It's all good.
Talking about Ninja
Turtles and prostitutes and shit. Like, we got the Ninja Turtles and prostitutes and hoes. Like, all right. And an AR-22 or 15 with a prostitute.
anything goes on this show.
Contrary to popular belief, we have whores up here. Pre-prostitutes.
Horror films.
I like the horror films.
Not the horror films, the horror.
Look at Cliff Hill. The AR is a hyperactive 22. Well, let's get this clear. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, the AR is man Lego. It's a lot of fun to play with, but I don't like it because it's too low of a caliber. Like, my go-to is the SKS, which is 7.62. So that's like a fucking big-ass round, the Tope Rev, which is also like a 7.62 round, but in a pistol. So it's a rifle round and a fucking pistol.
Wow, she really freaking likes big things, man. It's incredible.
Yeah. Like, Mike Wagner checking in from the Mike Wagner Show. Thank you for watching. We love your show as well, Mike.
Mike Wagner!
Mike!
Yeah, Mike!
Beware. Next time you leave your house, when you look in the rearview mirror, that's going to be Darren chasing you down the street.
Imogen, you got to say, yeah, Mike! Go for it. Your turn.
Yeah, Mike!
Yeah, Mike! Mike! That was good. She did it good enough. Well, I thought she was going to go for the Chihuahua Mike.
Why?
Because I don't know. You know, you just freaking did it. Mike!
You guys can check out Mike Wagner. He's on all the podcast platforms, Facebook, YouTube, all the great channels. You can check it out, the Mike Wagner Show. He's got amazing guests, so definitely give him a shout out as well. Hopefully Deborah's going to join us back Sunday night. And Imogen, we love having you fill in for whenever Deborah or Darren's got to leave, or if I need to take a week off, who knows. But it's great to have you on board with us.
You need to take a month off. I'm just kidding.
All right. It'll be the Darren Chef Show.
Awesome.
Can't even get my schnauzage fingers to get. Oh, there it is. It's like you're on acid.
Your schnauzage fingers?
Figure it out. There's
my leg. Like, you know, up there. There it is.
Over there.
Oh, my gosh. Sunday night, country singer Mike Kennan will be joining us on the Roger the Wild Child show. He's a
funny guy, too.
Matt Kennan. That's
Matt
it, Mike?
Kennan, yeah.
Oh, because Mike Wagner is here. That's why I'm saying Mike. Now, Matt Kennan will be, he's friends with Wade Jennings. So
that's exactly he'll be right.
Yep, he will be joining us. And you and I got the chance to see Matt in Fan Room Live with when Wade Jennings was on the Fan Room Live with Sherry Nelson.
Funny character, too, isn't he?
He is.
He's a great musician, but really funny guy. So, yeah, it'll be great getting him on here.
Yeah. So we'll be back Sunday night, and the next Wednesday will be our last Wednesday show. So thank you all for watching tonight. I definitely thank you again, Imogen, for joining us. Steve Hamm, thank you for being a part of our show today. Frankie McDonald, as always. Hopefully Deborah will be back on Sunday. She's got some personal leave that she's taking, so she should be back Sunday night. And Darren Sheff, my friend. My brother from another mother.
Your friend, your brother, your lover.
You're really beautiful. Your unibrow is beautiful. I could keep you.
Thank you. Thank you.
My God.
Guys, we'll see you Sunday night.
Imogen Gomez. Hello, you're beautiful. I could keep you.
Roger the Wild Child. We out of here.
Roger the Wild Child Show.